This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have a surprise and kind of out of the routine for my show. We've got Christopher Ciccone, and we're going to talk about his new book, Life with My Sister Madonna, and we're going to talk about some of the things that he studies in Kabbalah. How are you, Christopher?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So before we get started, where can we find your new book?
Just about everywhere now. Amazon.
Yeah.
Orders.
Do you have a website?
I don't have a website, no. Too many crazy people out there.
But it is out there. I found it, like, on the front shelf of my bookstore when I went in. So tell me, how long did it take you to write this book?
We started last October, right around Halloween, actually.
Wow.
And it went pretty quickly. It's something that probably should have taken about a year and a half, but it would have been too hard to keep it quiet, you know, for that long period of time. So we had to move fairly quickly on it. It was an interesting process.
Was that hard for you to do?
It was difficult to go back over all the old stuff, all the old wounds, you know, over and over again, because you don't just do it once. You know, you have to keep reading it and reading it again and reading it again, and then it gets edited and you read it again, and you know, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't necessarily get easier every time, you know what I mean?
So tell me a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about your life with Madonna.
Sure.
But I really want to talk about, you know, mind and Kabbalah and what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
This, because it appears to me when I read your book, I don't know how you feel today, but there was a lot of pain in that book. It was hard to read for me sometimes, feeling what you had to feel.
Right.
So tell us how
it
was.
I think a lot of people are feeling that way. You know, it's not sure what your question was about to be, but the letters that I've gotten from people, it's, you know, it's fascinating to find out how many people can relate, you know.
It was surprising.
Obviously in a slightly different way, but everyone seems to find it, everyone who's written it, at least has found a way to connect to it on some level. Whether it's sibling or spiritual or family or being gay or whatever, you know, all those things. So.
Tell me how it was to go from, because her fame happened rather quickly. How was it for, since you were so involved, you danced with her, you did a lot of the work for her shows to make them be what they are. How did it feel to go from an average life to be put in such a category of fame?
Well, actually, it was for me. I was so close to it that it wasn't. It was very gradual. I didn't really recognize it until, I don't think until like the Blonde Ambition tour. You know, probably in 1990, around there somewhere. You know how big it was when we were playing stadiums with 100,000 people, and you know that's when I realized how massive the whole thing was. But thankfully, it wasn't a surprise to me. I mean, it was kind of gradual for me. It was much more of a surprise to my other members of my other family, and much more difficult for them to deal with. You know,
how did she? Did the way she treat you change?
Nothing's changed. It evolved. It evolved, but the same, you know, I mean, obviously we had patterns of behavior that we were going through. And you know, one of the questions I get a lot is, you know, why did I keep going back? And, I mean, that was my family. You know, that's all I knew. That was the life I knew. And I wasn't close to my parents or my other brothers and sisters. And I was gay, so we make our own families. And it was, you know, that's the only family I knew. That was the only place I had to go. So, you know, it might seem weird to people for me to keep going back to it, even after things happened that were painful. But that's what my life was at the time, you know.
So. Well, I'm curious. It seems to me, and I don't know if you see this since you're so close, but when you read your book, it seems obvious to me almost that you submitted and subjected yourself to a lot of abuse. Why did you do that? Because that was a lot of pain, the way she
don't discover those things until later. I mean, it's kind of, when you're in the middle of it, it's painful, but, you know, it's not, you know, you don't, I didn't recognize the pattern until much later, you know, and the pay, being paid and stuff like that. I mean, it was not towards the end or when our relationship became very strained, but I sort of just took a look at all that stuff. And since I had never really done any of things before, I had no way to know really how much I should be getting paid, you know, or how it was supposed to be done, or that I should have gotten contracts. And, you know, it wasn't stuff I realized until much later. I mean, she was the only person I had worked for, really. I mean, I was doing my art and I was doing my other stuff, but it was so unrelated to what we were doing. There was no way for me to judge, you know, what a proper fee was, or you know, what should be written in a contract, or any of those things. And you know, she knew that. I imagine she knew that I didn't know, because she certainly had attorneys working for her. But I guess she sort of took advantage of that on some level, but. You know, I wasn't chained to a table or anything. I made the decisions to continue. So, I mean, I take full responsibility for that.
So, one of the other things I wanted to ask, you got exposed to a lot of glitter and glamour in your life. Did those people still play a part in your life? Demi Moore, Sean Penn, are they still around?
I speak to Sean. I spoke to him when his brother died. You know, Sean is somebody I respect still. You know, he's changed and grown, and a number of people in the book I'm still, I mean, a number of exes, basically, except for maybe Carlos. But it was the celebrity, you know, Demi Moore, them, you know, it was a strange little world. They kind of, there's a certain kind of female, you know, here in LA that likes to keep gay men around, you know, like an accessory until they find them, and until they find their man. You know what I mean? So contact with them is minimal. I don't really. It's not a relationship. I that was helping for me anyway. So I try to avoid that.
Now, these people, including yourself, have a lot of power in the world to affect people. You know, fame carries with it a lot of power, emotional power over people. Do these people in general have compassion for the little people, for the people underneath them? In other words, do they show any interest in doing something for the world other than for some kind of status or for some news to put them back in the headlines?
These people who you're referring to, you mean like the people I talk about in the book?
Like your sister and like those people, like, you know, Demi Moore?
I believe they really care. There's a couple of people I came across, you know. It varied from person to person. I mean, some people felt a responsibility to give back and some people didn't. But, you know, Madonna was genuine about her interest in supporting, you know, benefits for AIDS, and very much so. That's on the record, and she was, you know, I mean, I think she did care about it. She had friends that died, and we both did, and you know, it was the real thing, you know.
Did she take care of her family? I mean, she obviously has a lot of money now. Did she care about what happened to her other brothers and sisters and her parents and her grandparents?
I think that there was some compassion there, but I mean, it was very hard for her to grasp just how her fame affected the family, because it, like I said earlier, it's not. alive in their world. So, you know, when you have somebody that's famous and you're not a school teacher somewhere in Detroit and that's your sister, you know, you have to deal with it on some level personally. And you have to try to, and people expect something from you. They expect you to be a certain way. They expect you to be famous and they expect you to be rich. And how come you're, you know, a teacher in a school, just a regular person? So, you know, if you're at all unclear about what you are, it can be very difficult to manage that. You know?
All right, let's move into Kabbalah a little bit. In the Kabbalah, teaches that what goes around comes around energetically, basically.
Yeah.
And looking at this book, she has done some nasty things to you. What has, you know, and another thing is you are your emotions. You know, your emotions manifest your health through neurotransmitters,
right,
and things like that. Has she had any health issues over the past, say, decade?
Not that I'm aware of. Nothing. I mean, she's pretty, you know, I think she sees herself as incredibly spiritual. And I suppose in many ways she is. I don't think she sees those things as the things that you call them nasty. I don't think she sees those things as nasty. I think it was really just, I mean, like I said, that was our relationship. And, I mean, looking back and, you know, shining a light on it and being able to see the big picture, yeah, there were some shitty things. But at the same time, there were some really great things. So, you know, I got to be incredibly creative. And for me, that, you know, even on an emotional level, it really, at least for a time, outweighed that stuff. You know, but it got to a point, honestly, you know, when Guy came on the scene, but, you know, I had to step away. I really did. It really was, you know, kind of pushed away, but frankly, it was time for me to get away. You know what I mean? I had to get out of there. And I, you know, I know subconsciously that I was ready as well, you know.
So when I get an opportunity to talk to a lot of the luminaries around the world. One thing that we've all concluded from our own personal experiences and people close in our life is that consciousness obviously contracts and expands. And for whatever reason, most of us have found that it contracts and expands in about 2-year cycles. In other words, depending on how passionate you are about something, you will have that same degree of misery, and it goes in about 2 years, swings like a pendulum. Have you found that being in the life that you're in, it seems like it would be very profound both ways in your life?
It's definitely in the extreme, you know. It's incredibly great, and then it's incredibly, you know, sad. I mean, especially the way that I lived, or what, you know, the life that we were living, or I was living, was very much like that. It was, you know, you're riding this high, really high wave for a good year or two, and then you're back down at the bottom of the hill, where you're not working and kind of emotionally drained and kind of nowhere spiritually and just kind of stuck in this hole. And so something comes along that inspires you to bring you out of it, you know.
If you look back over your... Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I'd like to think that cycle is gonna sort of even out a little bit. You know, I'm hoping for that, but it won't be in the extreme like that anymore. It's exhausting, you know.
Yes, it is. I've been there, and it is. If you were to look back over to your life, do you find that it's in about that same kind of time period? About 2-year swing.
Yeah. I think the kind of, because of the life we were living, it was sped up a bit, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's life fast forwarded, you know, in fast motion. I used to think it was sort of like concentrated, but I realized that it wasn't concentrated. It was just really at high speed, you know.
Right.
So the ups and downs came rather a little bit quicker for us than for regular people, you know.
Yeah.
It was, you know, probably every 9 months, you know, it was up and down. You know, so.
you talk about in your book how she uses Kabbalah as a weapon. What do you mean by that? What does she do, and how do you use something like that as a weapon, other than thought
creating? Well, I mean, other than what?
You know, thought, quantum mechanics has proven that thought creates your reality. So how has she used that to create
weapon? In the most obvious way was when, you know, she blackmailed me with it, you know, to go and do it. I mean, I consider that using it as a weapon. You know, and not only that, just to justify any kind of behavior, but any kind of behavior, whether it's good or bad. I don't think it's Kabbalah in itself. I think it's just the way that she's taken to understand it, and it's the way that they behave around her, because they do behave differently around her than they do anybody else. And,
Yehuda
Berg behaves differently. Yes, they do. And it's that function of being a celebrity thing, and, you know, just how it happens. They attempt to pretend that they're not doing it, but it really is happening, you know. Mm-hmm. However, it's justified by the idea that, you know, that she's in a position where she belongs to be, and is in an elevated position spiritually because she is so powerful and the level that she's at. Therefore, she's closer to God than we are, and therefore she's always right. And that's what I mean by using it as a weapon. It justifies any kind of behavior. You toe the line, or you're crazy, or you're a drug addict. You know what I mean? So, and that's how she explains it to herself. You understand what I'm saying?
Now, another thing, if she really studies this, like she says she does, and including you, I'd like what your opinion is on this. And you what goes around comes around energetically, you know, through quantum mechanics, actually. And she knows that she's caused you tremendous pain because you've told her. How does she deal with that negative energy that goes out? What is her reasoning behind that? Does that make sense to you?
She might put out. No, I don't quite understand.
You know, she's done some negative things to the world, because if you hurt one, you hurt another. So she knows she has, because you've told her. If someone says I'm in pain and they're crying, then they're in pain, and you've got to be responsible for that. How does she deal with that?
For the most part, it's easier to. I think it's at least during our relationship, it was much easier just to kind of pretend it wasn't happening, you know, and refocus on. Maybe she saw it as distracting me from the pain, you know, to put me back to work or something like that. But it wasn't helpful in the end. You know, I think it was easier. It's easier to deflect it, to pass it on, to not so she doesn't really take responsibility for it. I mean, most of our interaction that it became, you know, when we were arguing with each other was never in person. It never happened in person. It always happened by email or by fax or by whatever. It was never. It was rarely. Maybe it was no. I don't think you ever had one confrontation face to face. You know.
I guess it's easier to be mean to somebody if you don't have to look them in the eye.
Yeah, it's much easier than sending him a letter or having the accountant call him and tell him. You know.
Mm-hmm.
She's avoided a great deal of, you know, of the pain that, you know, or...
So, is she in pain now?
I haven't seen her. I've seen photographs, but I know what a photograph can do and be, and, you know, you can't really judge a person from that, but I think she's exhausted, and I think she's probably feeling some pain. My intention to write the book is not to cause her pain. My purpose was to find myself and to wrap my head around this beast that I had been a part of, this great adventure that I had been on, and sort of discover how I fit into it, and that I actually was a part of it, and that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't this thing that happened, and I was just sort of going along for the ride. And I needed to expel those stories, and I wanted to tell the stories because I think it's an interesting story. Aside from, I mean, there are sad and depressing moments, but there are some great moments, and it's a great story that I think needed to be told. You know, I don't feel my intention or purpose was never not to betray her. It's really my story. You know, she happened to be in it, and that's unavoidable. Our lives are intertwined. You know?
Yeah, because it's an observation and perspective of a reality.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, you know, not everybody sees it that way. There's, you know, I've got a number of other nasty emails from people who just can, you can read it from any, you know, from any perspective. You know, there's a number of places you can read it from. But, you know, I think to be honest, and honorable and respectful.
So now I would assume we're getting a bad connection. Can you go somewhere else?
Okay.
There you go. It went away. So I would assume now, and I don't care what money you got for that book, but I would assume that you got a substantial dollar amount. Are you going to do something to help the world? Are you going to still continue in Kabbalah? Do you still participate in Kabbalah?
I participate in Kabbalah in my own way. I don't go officially to the center anymore. It just got too... It was getting way too cultish there, here, especially in Los Angeles, just with the celebrities running around, you know. You know, while I did enjoy... You know, I got an opportunity to work with with the children there, and developing some art programs and some photography things for children at risk that they were overseeing, and that was great. I really enjoyed doing that, and so I mean I may try to get back into that. I'd like to. I'm not sure if they'll have me, but
well, if they want, someone else will. I can tell you that.
I'm incredibly grateful to the universe at the moment, and. I feel a part of it, in a good place, but a part of it.
What are you wanting to do with your life now? I keep getting back to these emotions. There's a lot of negative pain. Let me just put it that way. Pain.
Yeah.
How and are you going to deal with that? What are you going to do? It's not going to go away. It is in, you know, if you look at Bruce Lipton's work, it's in every cell in your body. And to be healthy and to be well and get on your life, what are you going to do?
Well, I'm going to continue seeing my therapist, number one. I'm going to continue practicing the tools that I found useful in Kabbalah, you know, on a daily basis. And, you know, those small little things are, it doesn't go away, but they're tools that help me live with it, you know, and live in a positive way, rather than a fearful way and a negative way, and rather than running from it, you know, I sort of walk through it.
Have you looked at mindfulness, or do you practice being in the moment? Does that mean anything to you?
Say that again?
Does that mean anything to you, being in the moment?
What? Being in the moment?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, aside from the obvious implications of what it means, it means something to me. It's you know, I'm certainly not perfect, but you know, I try to be aware of where I'm at any given moment and what I'm doing, and you know, the things that I'm doing at that moment are going to affect the next moment. And I want those things to be good and creative and eyes a bit more to things. So, I mean, hopefully that's what I'm, you know, that's where I'm headed, you know. I mean,
tell us about
the T-shirt. Well, the T-shirt, you know, were just something, I'll tell you, the T-shirts were just sort of a fun thing to do. I, you know, I had, because of all this other stuff, I hadn't really had much time to deal with that aspect of my world because of so many other things going on. So I kind of, I put that down for a minute and I'll pick it back up a little while, sometime later. So right now that's kind of, you know, in a holding pattern.
Well, tell my listeners, I mean, they're interesting T-shirt. I think Sachs, Deborah Slack told me
they were Kabbalah, the 72 names of God, each one, you know, having its own attribute. And then there were Buddhist symbols, there was Heart Sutra, and then there were some Hindu gods, and it was all just sort of various things which I found interesting and also graphically curious. You know, I mean, it had to be something curious to look at. You know, so we were just doing it to get closer to God. You know.
Obviously, you and your sister are a bit estranged right now. What are you going to do about that in the future? Will you make the first step, or will she, or is there going to be?
Well, I made that step already, actually. I made that step about a week before the book came out. I at least made a step towards it. However, I don't know. I don't think her husband's very happy with me right now, and I'm sure she's not. But those things aside, it's going to take for us to find a way back to a level playing field. We have to be equal, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know that she'll ever be able to see me that way. And nor do I think that he'll be able to. I really don't think he's capable of that. At least right now. Pardon?
Go ahead. You take a breath, and I think you stopped talking, so I interrupt you.
Oh, no. No, all I was going to say is it's surprising that the death of Kabbalah that they have gotten to that how difficult it is for them to sort of, you know, see the world around them and get past the thing that they perceive as injustices to them.
Do you read, Christopher?
Do I read?
Yeah, what do you like to read? I'm curious what your personal interests are.
I like to read lots of different things. I mean, it depends on how my mood. If I'm feeling kind of the world closing in on me, I read science fiction because it sort of takes me out of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
I've got 4 books sitting on my desk side table right now. One is Crime and Punishment, Gore Vidal's biography, autobiography, and Plato. So, I mean, it's kind of a full range of things.
Do you read any of the new books on consciousness? What's been going on in consciousness?
I haven't.
Lynn McTaggart or Bill?
No, I haven't. But, you know, if you'd like to make a recommendation, I'd be happy to take one.
Well, we'll talk about that after the show for a few minutes if you want to. So I think I have some books that would help you. So when you live your life day to day, do you live thinking about thought creates and energy, what goes around comes around, or do you just live your life totally in the moment without worrying about that?
I think about both. You know, I mean, I start my day, and that's part of my Kabbalah thing is, you know, recognizing where I'm at and how I'm going to approach the world today. And I mean, that's the first thing I do in the morning, you know, and not limiting my thoughts and not thinking negatively and basically sending what energy I can out, you know, that might be helpful, you know.
Is it important?
That's how I begin my day. I try to stay with it. It doesn't necessarily last all day.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Is it important to you for the people that you hang around, for them to be I don't know what to call it. I call it a seeker of consciousness, a seeker of truth or whatever it is. Because kind of, you know what they say, birds of a feather. So do you find that you keep people around you that helps keep you focused on doing your life the right way?
I found about once I stepped away from, you know, that life with my sister and, you know, got some therapy. the people that I let into my world became, I had to do house cleaning, basically, you know. And I don't know that I actively seek people out, but I certainly don't, I don't hang around with people that I consider to be negative and who it just doesn't, I don't know, it seems so kind of trite, but, you know, it really is that simple that sometimes, you know.
I keep doing that, but I think that you can stop talking.
Okay.
Do you consider yourself deep, a contemplative thinker?
I do think a lot. I mean, I do spend a lot of time in my head, and sometimes that's not a good thing. But, I like to think about what I'm about to do, you know. I try not to react immediately or make a judgment immediately, you know. It's something I try to consider things before I do them, and that's something that I didn't normally do all the time, and, you know, that's something that I got from Kabbalah. It's not limited to Kabbalah. I mean, there's a lot of, spheres, schools of thought that have that same tenet. But I kind of think I do. I mean, I know when I don't think, things don't generally go right.
Mm-hmm. Are you in a relationship right now?
I'm not, and I think probably because there's a different myth. I haven't felt like myself. I can't remember when until now, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the book had a lot to do with it. I feel like I'm a different person, but I feel like me. It's an odd thing to feel. I've never felt more comfortable with myself than I do now.
Do you feel like you have a burden lifted off your shoulder?
That's a big part of it, you know, but I mean, I do get, you know, right now I'm sort of in the middle of this whirlwind at the moment, but, so, you know, there's a lot of great things, great energy coming in, but there's some plenty of negative stuff coming in my way, too, and I try not to, you know, let it in too far, but it's difficult to dismiss it, you know. So,
being caught up in this whirlwind of fame, and not having been alone for a long time, how do you deal with being alone now?
It's not easy. I'm rediscovering my good friends, so which is a good thing.
And
I think when I'm ready, you know, a relationship will happen. I don't know that my head is there yet. I'm still getting to know me, so I'm not sure.
Martin Avu said something to me. He said, "You know what I like about Christopher? I love him because he's full of life and he's funny. You know, and he's talented and he's caring. So,
It was nice of him to say that.
Yeah, well, I kind of think it's true. The first time I ever met you, I had no idea who you were, and there was something there, a depth mm-hmm. that wasn't.
Well, I don't consider myself a famous person, and even now, thankfully, authors aren't necessarily famous people, so, you know, it's a good thing, you know.
And
I've seen what it can do.
I'm curious, we're going to go back to consciousness for a minute. I know I'm going all over the board with you, but I know that one thing that happens to people when they get caught up in mind is that thoughts race a lot. Have you figured out how to stop that? Because, you know, thoughts create.
Yeah. I try to form them in a constructive way in my head rather than letting them sort of fly around, you know, and run the movie outside of my head instead of inside of it. And it does help keep it from going nuts.
Are you going to start back painting?
I want to. For the first time, actually last night, I started drawing a little bit again, and I think I'll get back there. Once I get all this stuff kind of cleared up, there's a few things that I, you know, just personal life things that I need to take care of, and once I do that, I think I'll have a clearer head and be able to, you know, find inspiration again, you know, which has probably all been staring me in the face, but I just can't see it right now, you know. It's blocking that view. So.
In your sister's life, does she know what forgiveness is, and does she do that thing?
Do that thing?
Forgive people.
Forgiveness?
So she's obviously angry. Does she know how to forgive?
I really couldn't answer that question. I really don't know. I suppose I'll find out. That there's anything that I require forgiveness from her for.
You've done anything, Christopher.
Have,
you know.
Yes, but a lot of people, you know, have had that question, you know, I'd like to find a way to get, you know, for us to be at least civil or the thing is, you know, it's also a personality thing with Madonna. She's not the buddy kind of person. She never really was, you know. And it's a lifestyle for her, so I really don't know. I couldn't answer that, really.
So, are you going to get to continue to see your niece and nephew?
I doubt it.
Have any other family to lean on in hard times?
Oh, yeah, I do. I have a couple of other nieces and nephews, and my brothers and sisters are around, and I speak to them, and you know, I have a great relationship with my parents, and you know, for the first time in years, you know, I feel like my father is a buddy of mine, you know, and it's great. I'm really happy that I've managed to reconnect with them, and it was something that didn't just happen. You know, it took some time, and you know, it took some honesty, and you know, I think the book was really a big part of that with my father, because he was the one person, you know, that I thought of as I was writing this that I did not want to cause discomfort to in any way, you know. He's the one person who was always in my mind when I was writing. He's had enough. I mean, he's had enough discomfort in his life, and I want him to be happy, you know, and I'd like him to be proud of his son. And, you know, so we talked quite a bit before the book came out. And I think we got to know each other a lot better, and he got to know me a lot better just by reading the book. You know, there's been a lot of stuff that he didn't know, you know.
Have you talked to him since it came out?
Oh, yeah. It was a couple days ago, yeah.
And how is that?
It was great. You know, he wishes, you know, he wishes that his children were all getting along, you know, and I think that, you know, he'd like his daughter, Madonna, specifically to sort of try to understand, that I'm allowed to tell my story. And, you know, I don't think she gets that. And she sees it as a betrayal and something I did for money, and you know, just used her. That's her take on it, and you know, there's nothing I can do about that.
Okay, I'm going to ask you kind of an esoteric philosophical question now. There's a lot, there's a lot of information out there about consciousness and quantum mechanics and how thought manipulates matter. Do you think that it's important for people to seek that knowledge and do something with it? Basically, quantum mechanics basically supports Kabbalah, a lot of it anyway.
Yeah.
So do you think it's important?
Look, it was very important for me. It made a major difference in my life.
How so?
Stopping and thinking about what you were doing and how it was going to affect other people and not thinking of yourself, not limiting your thoughts, not thinking negatively. Simply the act of changing the thought from the negative one to a positive one and approaching the world from that perspective. And I mean, from, the first public classes in Kabbalah, it's not something so esoteric that no one can understand. It's really quite simple stuff. And, it made a major difference in my life. It opened the door that had been shut in my head for so long. The world revolves around you and everything is, a painful gesture. And, it made a big difference. Just altering the thought, period,
I've listened to some of the other interviews that ABC and other people did of you, and one of the things when people ask you was about Madonna attempting to convert you to Catholicism, but I don't believe it's a religion. There's nothing to convert to. I believe it's just an understanding, a bigger picture. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, look, there are many levels of depth to it, and you can go very, very, very deep into it if you choose to.
It's not a religion, though, is it?
I wouldn't call it that. I think it can get cultish. It has that feeling to it sometimes. In Los Angeles. I mean, out here, according to Valerie, they were very open about the fact that it was probably the most difficult city to practice to set that in. If you're not in Los Angeles and if you're in the business, that is to say, Hollywood, if you're not selfish and egotistical and climbing your way to the top, people think there's something wrong with you. So it's a difficult place to maintain those and even keel
Do you feel relieved to be out of such of a fast lane of life?
Out of the fast lane?
Mm-hmm. Do you feel relieved that you could just kind of live normal now?
Well, unfortunately, that is never possible. I wouldn't call it living normally. But I just feel clear,
Mm-hmm.
I feel clear about everything. I think they're clearer to me than they were, three years ago. And it was a gradual thing, and it will continue, I hope. I'm certainly not, not every place. I'd like to rediscover love, that's something that's been missing for a little while, being able to be in love with somebody and having that, that part of my life is kind of, it's not, that door hasn't opened yet, and it's something that I'm pushing on it.
I know exactly the same thing, Christopher. So let me ask you this. I want to know, is this going around in your circles? I don't know if you know, but like Irvin Laszlo and Edgar Mitchell, a lot of the luminaries out there are talking about some earth changes happening in the next, say, 4 or 5 years, peaking maybe at 2012. Does anybody talking about natural resources and population. Does anybody talk about that in those circles? Do they realize that there's a trouble going on?
No, not really, not being out here.
Well, it's in your life that you've experienced.
In my life? I mean, you know, I talked about it with various people, but people are very wrapped up in their thing, you know, and it's difficult for them to see that picture. Finding those people is unusual, I think, rather than usual.
You knew that was real, that there are things happening and that there's scientific evidence out there,
right,
that, not talking necessarily about the polarized cats, but talking about reaching something called critical mass, and then some devastating things happen. Do you think that's important to know? And if you knew that, would you do something to try to educate people?
I'm not sure that I necessarily agree that that's something that's happening. I do think that it's an ongoing thing. I think that the planet itself is a living thing. And, you know, when the planet has had enough, it reacts. You know, and that may sound kind of weird, but, I don't think we're in as much control as we think. You know what I'm saying?
What do you think's in control?
Pardon?
What do you think? I guess what I'm going to ask you, you know, Kabbalah talks a lot about free will. We've got a couple more minutes. Do you think we have complete free will? Do you think that everything that happens is because we made it happen? Or do you think there's some larger picture?
Well, I don't know. Obviously there's a larger picture, and I do believe we have free will, but we have free will personally. We don't have free will for other people. In other words, I can't guess what you're going to do. You can exercise your free will, but that doesn't mean it's a good thing. You know what I'm saying?
I guess the reason that I asked that question is because a lot of people think that we have complete free will, but Jerry Schroeder, an interesting theologian, physicist from MIT, a Jew in Israel, actually, wrote a book called Science of God, and it talks a lot in there about it. And basically, if people realize that we did not have complete free will, because if we did, then you could say, Eva, I'm going to meet you at Starbucks at 3 o'clock, and you'd be there at 3, and I'd be there at 3, and nobody would be late, or nobody would be early, and we wouldn't get a flat tire, and we wouldn't break down, we wouldn't forget, we wouldn't get lost. So does thinking about that, with knowing that, affect the way you view the world? In other words, if something happens to you and you don't have control of it, there's nothing you can do except observe it and go, okay, it happened.
It's not so much that the thing happened, it's what you do afterwards.
Exactly.
You know?
Very good point. Exactly.
I can't guess what someone might do to me. I can, however, at least exercise a certain amount of control in my world. But if I'm driving down the road and somebody drives into me, that's not my free will. You know, it's what comes after that, you know. And if you want to take it, it goes right back to my sister and our relationship. I mean, those things, you know, I exercised my free will to keep going back to that painful place. And now I'm exercising my free will not to.
Is there anything, we've got about 8 minutes, is there anything that you would like to talk about that we haven't talked about already here? I don't care what it is, anything.
I can talk about some of the process of the book and the evolution of it. I mean, or at least people's react. I mean, when the book was known that it was coming out, the reactions, and the speculation was kind of shocking to me. To be honest, I should have been, and just how negative it was, just how bloodthirsty people were. Really, it's it was kind of it, 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 it,
spot again. Like your bad spot.
You're the only one who can hear me, though. I was just
going to say that. Is that any better?
Okay. Yeah, that's much better.
Okay,
we got about 3 minutes left.
That's okay. I was getting people were writing blogs. I was getting emails, you know, some of them telling me to tear her apart and, you know, and people just, just the speculation that, you know, that they were thinking the worst possible thoughts, my sister included, you know, that, you know, she went to the very worst place she could possibly go, the way that I was going to write this book, and that shocked me, you know, and it showed me how little she knew me, bigger point was that just how bloodthirsty people are these days. It kind of is shocking to me. You know, they really wanted to see blood, and I'm afraid they didn't get it. They got something else, but, you know, that was one of the things that was, you know, it was something I took note of, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It was interesting, and it was a little bit frightening, to be honest. You know,
I'm going to end this last... Sorry?
No,
I was just going to say, I'm going to end this with this last question. Do you love your sister?
Do I love my sister?
Yeah.
I do.
I thought so. Well, listen, Christopher, thank you for coming on my show. And thank you for telling how you feel and sharing what you've shared with me.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you and good night.
Good night.